Bailey put up the questions that I suggested. However, we don't need to be limited to these questions, but perhaps we can start there. And if anybody has questions, feel free to chime in. If I'm reading this right, it looks like the following people don't have a mic set up, which would be Sam, Lizette, Hannah, Craig, and Alex. And if that's the case, just go ahead and type questions and I'll do my best to see them. Just, I warn you, I'm distracted easy, so I often don't notice what's right on the screen in front of me. So if I'm missing a question, I just depend on the rest of you to bring it to my attention. The other important thing to mention is that I don't intend to tell you what to think about all these questions. If I was doing that, this would be a discourse. So I really hope that you all have some thoughts, opinions that you're willing to share or questions to ask to lead the discussion. So I thought we'd start off simple, or relatively simple, which is just, and by the way, because I missed Brother Todd's service, some of these may be duplicates or rehash some things that he brought up. And it occurs to me that's not really a bad thing, because hopefully it'll drive it home and get it to cement itself in your mind. So again, let's start off with question one. What are, in your mind, and what are some synonyms you think of for consecrate or consecration? Are we all hitting our concordance? There's a hand. That's cool. Yeah. How do you do that? That's how you do that. Okay. Thank you. I'm just learning this stuff. Thank you for pointing that out. I didn't see that. Takiya, please.
I think about dedication and sacrifice.
I'm sorry. I caught dedication and?
Sacrifice.
Sacrifice? Okay. Any others? I see two hands. We'll go with Bailey first.
I had separation.
Separation. Okay. Cherian?
I was going to say a contract that we take with God.
Contract. Right. And Tim?
I was going to say a promise, but that's the same thing as a contract. So.
Okay.
Cherian.
Yeah. If I'm trying to remember where I looked this up. I had a few answers here. A dedicate was one of them, which was Takiya's. Also to sanctify or prepare, which, you know, separation is kind of along those lines, and to make holy, which is in line with sanctification. So I don't know if any of you had a chance to see these questions in advance. I apologize that I didn't send them out a lot sooner, but does anyone know, have any ideas of where we see consecration in Scripture? Because it's actually pretty interesting. I don't know if those hands are still up or not. Bailey, is your hand still up? No. And Tim, okay. Yeah, to make sure you clear them, otherwise I won't know the difference. I might, if I'll start off with some suggestions, and if you have other suggestions or you come across any, let me know. So if we look at Exodus 28, verses 3 and 41. See, Exodus 28, 3 and 41. Get that in there. And let me try to pull that up on my computer. It's a little quicker than my Bible. And maybe could we get a volunteer that would be willing to read those by a show of a hand? Tina, please.
Exodus 28:3. Tell all the skilled workers to whom I have given wisdom in such matters that they are to make garments for Aaron for his consecration, so he may serve me as priest. And then 43. After you put these clothes on your brother Aaron and his sons, anoint and ordain them. Consecrate them so they may serve me as priests.
Thank you. And what you'll also find is in the 29th chapter and in the 30th chapter, this is a recurring theme for the consecration of Aaron and his sons. So if you read those, like 28:3, make Aaron's garments to consecrate him. Think about what that means. His garments consecrate him. So if we look at our notes, they dedicate him. They separate him. They make him holy. So we kind of have a good example. That's how those make sense, I think. I'll just continue on with some suggested scriptures. And like I said, if you come across any others, let me know. I have my handy cheat sheet because I put these questions together. Let's see. Psalm 55. Thank you, Charon. Gather to me this consecrated people who made a covenant with me by sacrifice. Okay. So to go back to those notes, they're separated people, sanctified, they're made holy. That makes sense. Very good. Thank you. And that was not on my list. So I'm glad to see that, and I'm going to add it to my list. I think sometimes it depends on which version of the Bible you happen to be looking at. I don't remember what version I was looking through. If I could ask for another volunteer to read Exodus 32:29, maybe I should pick on people. Takiya, please.
Exodus 32:29. Then Moses said, "Dedicate yourselves today to the Lord, for every man has been against his son and against his brother, in order that he may bestow a blessing upon you today."
Thank you. So what word there do you think has been translated consecrate? Anybody, Takiya or whomever?
Dedicate.
Dedicate, absolutely. Yeah. Dedicate yourselves, you know, in order that he may bestow a blessing upon you. And at this point, if you looked at the context, I guess I should have really looked at the greater context. Let me back that off a little bit. 27 to, let's say, 30. I just want to see really quickly where it says who he's speaking to. Here we go. If you look at maybe 27 through 29, you see that this has to do with God speaking to Levi. And so he's telling the entire tribe to dedicate yourselves to the Lord. So there's another example of consecration. Let's see, Bailey, Romans 12. There you go. That's one I think we all should recognize. Present your body as a living sacrifice. I wonder if that word is in there in some way, shape, or form. Definitely something I think we should, it definitely is the idea of it, whether or not the word is actually there. So thank you, Bailey. Let's take a look at Numbers 6:12, and it occurs to me that I can probably do what some of you have been doing and actually copy them in there. Numbers 6:12, let me give a little more context here. I didn't think to actually quote these based on context, so I'm going to highlight a little more. Tina, Psalm 48, "I delight to do your will, O my God, your law is within my heart." So that's certainly along the will, along the lines of our attitude, absolutely. But we have a look here at number 6, and I just copied 10 to 12. The key part is in 12. This has to do with offerings to the priest. And notice in verse 12, "and shall dedicate to the Lord his days as a Nazarite." So that's dedicate or consecrate. Consecrate to the Lord his days. I think that's another intriguing idea that, you know, consecration, if we think of it as dedicating, promising, making holy again, this is kind of driving home this concept of what consecration really means. If we see the ways that things have been, actually, if you look in verse 11, "he shall consecrate his head." So make that holy as well. And just to be brief, because I don't want to take too long to talk about this, I'm going to give you a couple more answers that I'm just going to type up here. We got 1 Chronicles 29:5, which talks about dedicating your service. We have 2 Chronicles 13:9, which is actually talking about the consecration of false priests. And we have Micah 4:13, which talks about the consecration of the spoils of war. So some of these are really intriguing just because I think we don't always think about, you sometimes think it has to be to make holy. And in some of these cases, in the case of false priests, I think that's not really what's happening. It's a slightly different meaning. So now that we've talked about, you know, who's being consecrated, what's being consecrated, in what of these examples are similar to our consecration? When we talk about consecration, as Brother Todd mentioned, or as sort of works in with what Brother Aaron had to share, how is our consecration similar or different to these examples? Any thoughts? Tim, please.
Well, it seems to me, from what I'm understanding, that the consecrations of the Old Testament that these examples are talking about, it's more of a physical outward thing, whereas consecration, as we understand it, or what Jesus was talking about, consecrating yourself to the Lord, was more of a interpersonal thing, that what didn't necessarily rely on your what you did outwardly, but what you did on how your feeling on the inside is more okay. Like an inner bond.
Okay. So there's a difference. I don't want to give any or steal any answers, but I like to look at those words like separation, a setting apart, and to think that it was setting apart a priesthood. I think that we can say that consecration right now is setting apart a priesthood. Oh, I think maybe I skipped over actually that. Leviticus 8:33. Bailey?
Okay, I was going to say the priesthood, just since between the priesthood then, it was an earthly priesthood, and the priesthood that's being configured now is a heavenly priesthood.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay, so we have a setting apart. But if we go back to some of those other words, a dedication, it's a slightly different concept, right? Instead of just setting, if we talk about consecration for us as a group today, it is a setting apart of us. Is it a dedication of us? In what way would it be a dedication? Do you think that's different than separation? Do you think it's the same thing? You know, those of you without mics, feel free to type at us. I'm not sure if I'm asking hard questions or do easy questions. But like I said, I don't want to keep being the one that's talking, but I also don't want to leave all this silence. So let me make an argument for why dedication is a little bit. Okay, Bailey, before I go and keep talking, Bailey, go for it.
We had from the Diaglot that a dedication day,
1 Peter 2:9.
And we had 1 Peter 2:9, which I can read. Let me turn to it. 1 Peter 2:9. You are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for possession. You may proclaim all the excellencies of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light.
And you said something about dedication, but it broke up at the very beginning. What was from the Diaglot?
A people for.
Maybe you better type it because I still didn't catch that. A people, maybe, is all I heard. People for a purpose. Aha, thank you. And so I like that, right? If you think about us today, if we think about the priesthood back then, they were a people for a purpose, and we like to think that we're a people for a purpose. That's our purpose, is to serve and follow him. It definitely is, in a sense, a contract or a promise. I don't think it was used that way scripturally, per se, like in those examples we were looking at. But when we do, it's our voluntary dedication or separation. And in that sense, we're making a promise. It's also, I think, a sign of being sanctified or made holy, or an outward sign of hopefully a process that we've been going through, right? I'm trying to kind of bring this back to these words we came up with at the very beginning, to bring home what is, you know, consecration. Brother Bill, you but a race chosen, a royal priesthood, a nation holy, a people for a purpose, so that the virtues you may declare of the out of darkness, you won having called into the wonderful. That feels a little scrambled. Oh, it's a dialogue. Thank you. That explains it. Having called into the wonderful light of himself, perhaps. Dialogue's a little tricky, but thank you, Brother Bill. Okay, so we talked a little bit about how we have similar consecration, similar dedication, similar separation. We talked briefly about how it's different. It could be internal. I think also you have some other ones like false priests. Obviously, this is different, and it's holiness. Whereas I think they were trying to consecrate those false priests, but it was not the right attitude. So I want to emphasize that these are my questions. I haven't seen a lot of other questions from you yet, and that's fine. But feel free to chime in if you do have additional ones. Otherwise, let's move on to question 4: Who may consecrate? What are the prerequisites we think of? Are there prerequisites we think of for consecration? And I'm not sure if your hand is still up, Bailey. If it is, you're welcome. Can anyone think of any requisites? Takiya, please.
Something we were talking about in our Volume 6 study 2 days ago, or yesterday, I can't remember, was that being tentatively justified is a prerequisite to consecration. And what Brother Russell said that was tentative justification is, it implies a recognition that sin is exceedingly sinful. It implies that the believer has set his mind and his will to follow righteousness in all of life's affairs, but it does not imply sacrifice yet.
Okay. So if we could sum all that up, do you think understanding might perhaps be a synonym? Understanding maybe and commitment, something like that. I see a hand, Bailey.
Just to add on to there's a level of understanding of counting the cost, and you have to understand not only what the cost, but also what your net commitment. And you have to see it as this is my reasonable service.
Okay, so counting the cost. Another word I like, Takiya, or maybe phrase is a better way to describe it, is having a relationship with God. And I think I came across that one time in it was sort of, what was it? Like a symposium at the General Convention a number of years ago, where it was sort of the pros and the cons of this concept of tentative justification, because some people really don't like that term. And my recollection was it was actually rather humorous, because at the end, both brothers realized they were in agreement. It's just maybe they didn't like the term, but they totally agreed on the concept, you know. And so having this relationship, I think, is really big. Let's see, it's from Tim. Matthew 19:21, Jesus answered, "If you want to be perfect, go sell your possessions and give it to the poor, and you'll have treasure in heaven. Then come, follow me." Okay, that's a good prerequisite. And so if we say selling our possessions, yeah, Takia, thank you. Yeah. So some people really, they just don't like the word. And I don't think it's the, I think that mostly we agree. It's just some people don't like calling it tentative. That's all. But if you take that phrase out of there, everyone feels a lot more comfortable or has less to disagree on. Takia, please.
It takes too long to type, but I was just going to say that I think we have like predetermined definitions to the word tentative. And mm-hmm. So like when we think of tentative justification, it doesn't sound right to what we like previously applied to the word tentative. And that would be why it becomes confusing. Because, yeah, my class had, like, this whole, like, debate on it. Not really a debate, but like, it got intense about the whole word. And then at the end, we all came to the same conclusion. But, yeah.
Yeah, so I like to say things like, just, you know, you have a relationship, a growing relationship with God. So back to Tim's verse here, Matthew 19:21. How does that look like a prerequisite? Sell your possessions, give to the poor, and you'll have treasure in heaven, then come follow me. So if we don't take this literally as selling everything we have and giving it to the poor, how could this symbolically pertain to this preparation for consecration or kind of that step? Because this is kind of right on the verge. It's maybe part preparation and partly taking that step. In fact, it's getting into question 5. That's part of the costs and the commitment. So if we're not actually selling our possessions and giving them all to the poor, what are we doing that is maybe a picture or similar to that? Tim, please.
Well, when you asked the question, I was thinking of what kind of we're supposed to do as what a consecrator is supposed to do. We have earthly possessions that we use, and basically the way I interpret this is you need to be willing to help other people with your possessions and share them with other people as much as you need them yourselves if they need them. And don't I'm trying to think of a way to say it, like, keep too much for yourself. Use what you have to help other people, and don't focus too much on yourself is kind of what I get out of this. Because in heaven, you'll have the treasures that you think you have on earth, but really it's not pretty much worth it.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that what that calls to mind for me is the parable of the talents. You know, do you have your talents and bury them, or do you use them? Matthew, the 25th chapter. So thank you for that. Any other thoughts? Sometimes, you know, things we think of may be obvious to others. So maybe you're not even thinking of what I'm thinking of because you're like, oh, well, of course. But one thing that came to mind is if you're going to consecrate, you need to be called. And it needs to be those who have faith in the justifying power of his blood. Some of these I got directly from some reprints dealing with this. There are a number of reprints on consecration. So you have to have faith. You have to have a relationship, which are both kind of related to being called. I'll type these into the notes. From Shelby, Leviticus 20:7-8. Consecrate yourselves and be holy, because I am the Lord your God. Keep my decrees and follow them. I am the Lord who makes you holy. Follow the guidelines God has given us in the scriptures prior to consecration. Very nice. Yes. And there you have a good example. Consecrate yourselves and be holy. It's sanctifying and it's making holy. So there's another good tie back to that first question on synonyms. So keeping his decrees. Very good. Thank you. Bailey, John 6:44. I'll just volunteer myself to read that. No one can come unto me unless the Father who sent me draws him, and I will raise him up on the last day. Absolutely. Great example. And I have a note here. I have to remind myself what it means. Psalm 55. Gather my godly ones to me, those who have made a covenant with me by sacrifice. You should all recognize that from the morning resolve. Gather my saints together unto me, those who have made a covenant with me by sacrifice, should sound familiar. So actually, I think that may have almost been an answer to question 5. What are the costs and the commitments? So let's move into that. What are the costs and the commitments? We talked about the prerequisites, right? We need to have a level of understanding about the truth. You have to count the cost. You need to have faith. need to have a relationship with your father. So now we move on to, well, I think Tim already really hit on that, right? Giving up your earthly possessions, maybe not physically, maybe not actually selling them all, but maybe mentally repurposing them, that they're not just for you. Bailey, please.
I'm trying to find the actual quote. I think it was Brother Ian that we're giving up our earthly life right under Adam. Maybe it was Brother Todd. Our earthly life right on earth, on the perfect earth in the kingdom, to be in the church class. You're not guaranteed of life in the kingdom.
Got it.
And to go along with that, we have Ecclesiastes 5:4-5. When thou vowest a vow unto God, defer not to pay it, for he hath no pleasure in fools. Pay that thou hast vowed. Better is it that thou shouldest not vow than thou shouldest vow and not pay.
Thank you very much. Surrendering all claim, that's nicely summed up. Surrendering all claim to earthly things, but retaining stewardship to do the right thing with them, right? I think I at this point, to try to encourage some, you know, your to share your thoughts, I want to sort of ask all the questions at once. What are the costs, the commitments, our motivations? What does a successful consecration look like to you? How do we gauge our progress? Do you have any thoughts on any of, or your own questions, as I said to you, Bailey? How do we know if we're making progress? I think that's kind of like number 7, right? How do we gauge our progress? How do we know if we're making progress? For a lot of questions, I want to throw them back at you. However, this particular one, I think, is a little easier to answer over time. So I'm going to try to answer this one myself. It's a little harder to know that answer when you haven't been walking for a number of years. I don't know if I'm making progress. That's a good question. I don't know if I have a really great answer for it. I don't want to be vague. But, you know, I think for my part, you have to really analyze yourself. You have to keep looking at you. And this is actually just, in my opinion, an important life skill, to look at you, yourself, you know, self-analysis, and look for that progress. I think a lot of times people don't have a good ability to look at themselves. And if we develop that, I think you can, do you see growth in yourself? Maybe even having others. I don't want to steal anything from Cherry, and so I'm going to pass the mic to him at this point and see what he has to add.
Thank you, brother. Yes, I just want to clarify the question a little bit. Is the question in terms of about your progress in your spiritual growth, or is it about your character, or is it both?
I think both. That's my interpretation. But Bailey, if you want to clarify otherwise, I think those are kind of intertwined.
In my mind, they're growing by the progress in your walk.
Yeah, I think. Cherian, please.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch half what Bailey said.
Yeah.
So can you repeat that?
I'm not sure what's up with your mic, Bailey, but we're cutting out about half the time, so we hear the first half of a phrase and lose the second.
Okay. We've got two rooms open at the same time, so. I would say the two things that Cherian was describing are basically the same. You can't have one without the other.
Okay. I kind of agree. I like the idea of them being intertwined. Cherian?
Okay. Yeah. I understand like that intertwined. I mean, it does work. Just wanted to know which aspect I needed to talk about. Talking about both, I believe that for me personally, I see a growth or progress happening in terms of a consecrated person, as in they continually seek out the truth and always try to solidify their knowledge of the truth in all aspects, from the basic doctrinals to the hard meats, if you want to say, and even to a point where that you are able to talk about any subject, any topic from the Bible, and be able to express those to even the simplest minds, or even the worldliest of people, that you are able to express and to testify to others about that truth. So that's my consideration of that knowledge growth. So throughout your consecrated life, you should be able to see such a growth and such a development continually happening within yourself. At any point, if you see that you are lacking that knowledge or that zeal to continue to grow, then I feel that need that the progress is being stopped or is not progressing. And as well for your character wise, a growth that has to happen at all times and throughout your life. There's not one point that you should stop or not want to grow or change into a more Christ-like person. And that's what God desires of us most, more than knowledge itself, that he desires for that character to be changed in progress, for that progress to show forth. And we know that the biggest way that we can assess the progress is by its fruits. So when others see the fruits of our character changing, and us becoming more Christ-like, others can see it for themselves, and those fruits show forth that there is that change within us. And me personally, I've had that experience of brethren telling me that there's been things that they've seen change or seen improvement, and that's something that you can gauge on, where others would be able to notice and to see forth that you have been progressing and changing. And as Brother Austin was saying, that it's a self-assessment that you have to take upon yourself. And as as Memorial is coming towards or getting closer, it is time for us to reflect upon ourselves and our consecration and how we are progressing or if we are not progressing, and how we can further progress, or how much further we can we can change in our life or do things differently in our life to help us progress. And so there's many things that we could talk about progressing, but hopefully I mentioned enough to answer that question.
Thank you, Jaron. And to Kia for, if you haven't seen, she added a quote here at the bottom of the page as well. I'm going to try to summarize. So how do we know we're progressing? Well, self-assessment, but also the assessment of others. I was going to kind of say that, you know, if you have good friends who can tell you anything, that's really important, because even if we're amongst our brethren, there's still, we can't always tell anybody anything. You need someone who can be completely blunt and open with you, I think is important. And then, also, as Cherian pointed out, we're looking at character development, but also academic. I love that word, but it's the only word that comes to mind. Academic building of our understanding. So these are kind of several different directions you could go. Tim, please.
Well, I thought I'd use a quote from Jesus for what a successful consecration might look like. It says, John 13:34, a new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. Sorry, the phone's ringing. So basically, people will know a successful consecration will be someone that loves others as they love themselves and sacrifices their time for other people. So that's how I see a successful consecration, when you can actively see them sacrificing their time for others and loving one.
Thank you. And so that really hits on the character side of things. You know, I think certainly if you have that intent, you should always see room for opportunity to grow. If you don't see room for opportunity to grow, that's when I think you should be concerned. We always have something to strive for. And then kind of related to what Cherian was saying earlier, just the phrase we use, you know, make the truth your own. You know, be increasingly comfortable with it. And, you know, we're all of one faith, and yet we're all going to have our own take, our own understanding, our own concept of what's important. And so you just need to kind of grow that and get comfortable in it until you know what you believe, you know why you believe it, you have no problem sharing it with others. And if you find there's that one thing that when someone asks you, you're like, I don't really feel comfortable talking about that, well, then maybe that's a sign that that's the direction for you to start looking. Any other thoughts or questions? One thing that I came across, going back to the idea of motivations, is 1 Corinthians, let me type this in, 1 Corinthians 2:10, for to us God revealed them through the Spirit, for the Spirit searches all things, even the depths of God. So back to our motivations about just having our understanding revealed through the Spirit. To grow an understanding. And again, I grabbed this from a reprint, and I don't remember, I didn't write down which reprint, but it was discussing this idea that, you know, when our Lord was baptized, and more things were open to him as a result of his baptism and his consecration. And so likewise, we see the same thing, that our dedication and setting apart is the start of the Lord working with us more fully and hopefully opening up these things, whether they be character development or a building of our understanding. Well, I do want to give you the opportunity to share more or ask more. We've sort of reached the end of the questions that I had. Anything else as this might pertain, or even other questions, things you'd like to talk about at this point from Brother Todd's or Brother Aaron's services, or we have another 10 minutes set aside here that we can absolutely use, or perhaps your brains are full. Well, I don't know. We're not seeing a lot of additional questions. See, Brother Bill, thank you. 2 Corinthians 4:15 related to motivation. For all things are for your sakes, that the abundant grace might through the thanksgiving of many redound to the glory of God. That the abundant grace might through the thanksgiving of many redound to the glory of God. Thank you, Brother Bill. How do we know if we're being called? Okay, that's a good question. I think that's one that I struggled with for a long time. It kind of relates to an even bigger question, which is to what extent you see God working in your life. And it's an interesting one, and one that everyone has to come, I think, to an individual answer. I'm going to go back to the thought before about, do you have a relationship with God? Do you feel a relationship? Do you see a relationship? Do you want a relationship? Just the fact that you're asking that question already is a good sign, because I think if you're not being called, you're probably not terribly interested, and you're not even considering it. And I see your hand, Sharon, and I'll pass it to you in just a sec. I know that several of you were already, we're at the meeting we had at the General Convention, and so you're going to already have heard this before, but I'll share it anyway, because I think it, you know, we all have a personal answer too. But in my case, I had been thinking about it for a very long time, but I was raised a Bible student, and therefore, you know, sometimes that's almost too easy. I grew up not having to struggle for what I believe, not questioning a lot, just accepting a lot. And so in my own case, I was waiting for some strike of lightning to tell me this is the time. And the most ironic, just interesting way it worked out is that there was a baptismal discourse coming up at a convention, and there was no one there for it. No one was stepping forward to symbolize. And Brother Burton Brown, who I'm sure many of you don't know, but he would record the sessions. And I was up in the balcony sitting next to him, and he turned and looked at me and said, you know, you're never ready. And really, that was speaking exactly to my heart at that very moment, because I'd been thinking about it and wondering, how do I know when I'm ready? And he looked at me, and for no reason, this was not part of any conversation, he just said, you know, you're never really ready. And I that was me. I just knew right then and there that that was God talking to me through Brother Burton, and that was what I needed. And you're all going to have a different answer, I think. But if you're listening and you're asking, it's a good sign. Charon, are you still interested? I just talked a long time, and your hand's gone.
Yeah, thank you, brother. I think you touched on the key word there, interest. I think that's what would be what I would call God calling us. And I really appreciate your testimony there. For me personally, I've also grown up in the truth, and I mean, the interest is something that you would think is something that someone who grows up in the truth would not be able to find. But it is actually even that itself is what draws or knows, lets one know that he is being called, because for me personally, it's what drew me closer to consecration, because I was interested in what and learning more and to finding about the truth and learning about it, trying to grow in my knowledge. And it's really what got me to think about consecration and things like that. And even if you look at someone who is not born in the truth, when they find the truth, it's the interest, or even seeking for the truth itself before they find it, because they're interested in finding the truth itself. And so, and then when they find it, it's the interest to know more, to know as much as you can, and to learn and to absorb as much as you can. And that interest is what draws them to being, and is what I would consider being called. And God influences this in allowing them to see these truths and to become and to feed their interest, actually. And to feed it and to let them draw closer and closer to him and be able to come to that consecration. And it's as we know that it's not for everyone, and it's not going to be all who show this interest. And so we understand that that's why we see that many do follow who don't seem to want to be want to consecrate, and we understand that this is part of that calling, and that even though they may show interest at first, that they don't find it it's something that they desire. And for me personally, it's something that I desire, and I desire to do the will of the Lord, and that's what called me, and that's what keeps me going each and every day.
Thank you, Charon. Another thing that came to mind while listening to Charon right there is the word commitment in question five. And, you know, there's only two things in life, I think, that are a lifelong commitment, at least that come to mind quickly. And it's no coincidence that they're closely related, because we look at marriage, the marriage of Christ and the church, and then our symbol of marriage today. And I really think they're closely related in this idea that you just should not go there unless you really understand this is a lifelong commitment. And so if you're wondering, you know, are you called? Well, are you interested? Is this something that's really important to you? And if you're wondering, are you ready for the commitment? You have to just say, you know, or ask yourself, this is for life. This is not for the next few years until something better comes along. And that's one of the reasons why, as Brother Todd was talking earlier about not letting anyone pressure you into it, it's really important that when you're making a step like this, that you really understand the commitment. And that's the danger of pressure, is pressure makes you jump before you're ready. It makes you jump before you have had a chance to come to your own decisions. You don't want to do it because someone else is telling you to, or because it's convenient, or because your best friend is getting immersed, and therefore this is such a wonderful time for it. You need to just be ready in yourself, comfortable with your decision, and thinking, you know, is this, am I ready to make this commitment? Am I positive that I will never change my mind, that I will never waver from this? That's a really important distinction. Well, we're right up near the edge of time, but we have time for a few more comments or questions if you'd like. Charon, let's see your hand up, Charon.
I don't know if this was answered before, but it was something that came to my mind. I might have missed it when we talked about it, but why, and I see it on the questions, question five is what are the costs, but my question is, and something that I would want to consider is, why is it important to count the cost before you make concentration? I don't know if that was answered, but something that I would be part
of. Okay. Yeah, I don't think we specifically addressed it in that way. Any thoughts from the rest of you? Why is it important to count the cost? I'm intentionally being quiet, trying to force some of you to talk. Tim, please.
It's actually James. Computer wasn't working, so I could not join in, unfortunately.
Okay.
I think it's important to count the cost just because it's a lifelong commitment that we all have to consider. And I think when you consider the fact that it's lifelong, it's kind of a scary thought. And that's always been something that's always been, you know, scary to me. And I've been counting the cost, I think, for a while now, and I'm just trying to figure out if I can make that choice. And I think that's the one thing that's kind of holding me back a little bit right now.
Thank you, James. I think that's a good point. And, you know, I'm trying to think of the scripture that talks about counting the cost specifically. You know, it says I'm going to paraphrase it. I don't remember off the top of my head, but, you know, who is going to build a building that doesn't sit down and make sure he has all the materials? And if you look at this from the standpoint of consecration, and you look at this as a building that is your life in the making, are you going to get halfway through and say, you know, yeah, I just don't have all the materials, I'm done? And I think I really like the idea of relating this to marriage, because I think whether or not you all are ready for marriage, I think you get this idea that just says, okay, I found someone that I am going to make it work with, and it's a decision, and that's it. If you trust yourself to make a promise that you're not going to back out from, I mean, at some level, that's it. Uh-oh, am I breaking up? No, just Takiya. Sorry, Takiya. I'll try to type it out so you can see it. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to type everything I just said. But if marriage is us coming to a decision that we will stick with this one person for life, then consecration is roughly the same. We will stick by our commitment, and continue to develop our spirit. something along those lines. I'm trying to think and type at the same time. So I'm not too good at that. But I think we understand the idea of a commitment such as marriage. And to me, at some level, this is really that simple. You know, are we ready to say that this is what we want to do? It's already late, I know, for those on the East. Yes, absolutely, Brother Bill. I was going to suggest that. So it's already late on the East. We should wrap this up. Oh, Cherian, before you can go ahead.
All right. I didn't know if we had time. Just another comparison that I thought about is that of a contract. When we make a contract with someone else, there's terms and conditions that we agree upon, and with the Lord, we make a contract as well. And this comparison works well with commitment and upholding our agreements, because the consecration is not a one-sided agreement between where God has upheld things that He promised, but there's things that He desires of us, and we have to uphold those things. And so that contract is an agreement between both parties, of us and as well as with God. And so that's a very good comparison that I like to think about, because if we do violate any part of those contracts, we know that God will uphold His side 100%. But if we don't uphold our side, or we don't uphold our agreements, and then we will not be able to complete that contract.
Thank you. And you know, that reminds me of one more important detail, which is, you know, our part of the contract is not to be perfect. You know, we know we can't be perfect, and He's not expecting us to be perfect. He's expecting us to do our best. And you have to think of it that way. Can I agree? Can I commit to doing my best, to not walking away and saying, you know what, I give up on this, which again is marriage, right? You're supposed to do your best, and you're going to fall, and you're going to fix it, and you're going to try it again. And it's just, I think, committing to not walk away from it and keep picking it up and trying again. So in any case, we I think have reached a good point to come to a conclusion. And I want to thank all of you who stuck it out this late in the evening, especially on the East, and Bailey and Brother Bill for the technical side of things, and everyone for their participation.